This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
Hello, you're listening to Beyond the Ballot Box with me, Dashran Johan. The UMNO General Assembly took place last week, and a whole bunch of stories have come out of it. A potential three-way battle to be UMNO's Prime Minister candidate, the Najib factor, UMNO's waning partnership with PAS, and many more. So, loads to unpack. Joining me on the show today to help me do exactly that is Dr. Oh A. San. He's a senior fellow at the Singapore Institute of International Affairs. Welcome back to the show, A. San.
Hi, nice to talk to all of you.
All right, A. San. I'm sure you've been observing the UMNO General Assembly that took place over the past week. What were your overall impressions of the General Assembly? Was it a standard affair, or did you find a lot of things surprising or interesting?
Well, in most of the previous PAU, or UMNO General Assemblies, you would have a sitting Prime Minister sort of dictating his policy to the delegates, and the delegates would more or less rubber stamp those policies made by the senior leaderships and especially the Prime Minister of the day. That, I think, changed a little bit after UMNO's defeat in the 2018 general election. And after that, I think there was an AGM whereby it was sort of a somber mode, and they lost power and they tried to regroup and so on. But this particular UMNO General Assembly, it's somewhat peculiar, somewhat even surreal, right, in that you have a sitting Prime Minister who is indeed still a senior UMNO leader, but not the president of the party, right? Mm-hmm. And it would appear that throughout the General Assembly, there's sort of what we would call palpable tension between those who are in charge of UMNO, the mainstream faction of UMNO, led by its party president, Zahid Hamidi, on the one hand, and the Prime Minister, Ismail Sabri, on the other hand. The whole assembly looks like a means to sort of egg on the Prime Minister to go for general election as soon as possible. And then there will be some of his retorts to that and so on. So it's, I don't know. I mean, perhaps it's a new development in party politics in Malaysia. I would not be surprised you will see similar things in some other parties. Yeah.
Right. So let's break down each of that, because you brought up a lot of interesting things, right? And the reports that have come out mirror a lot of what you say. And one of those reports indicate that the race to be UMNO's Prime Minister candidate, it could potentially be a three-way battle between the current Prime Minister, Ismail Sabri Yaakob, UMNO President Zahid Hamidi, as well as his deputy, Mohamad Hassan, or more commonly known as Tok Mat. What can you tell us about this potential three-way battle? Do you see it happening as well?
I think at this point, it's still mainly a two-way battle,
right?
Namely the mainstream faction of UMNO, which includes Zahid Hamidi, Tok Mat, as well as the former Prime Minister Najib Razak. They would very much like to sideline or ease out Ismail Sabri from the premiership. I mean, over the past few months, when Ismail Sabri has been the Prime Minister, I think at first this mainstream faction thought Ismail Sabri would do their bidding in both policy implementations, which he sort of toed the line a little bit. For example, in declaring yet another round of people being able to withdraw the EPF savings and so on. But perhaps they were expecting even more from Ismail Sabri, such as clearing some of the legal troubles and so on, which Ismail Sabri evidently did not deliver. And not only that, he went to the political divide to get their parliamentary support from Pakatan Harapan, right? So I think now, at this particular moment, it would appear that if the mainstream faction would like to ease out Ismail Sabri, the most likely candidate to replace him would be Tok Mat, because... what I'm trying to say is actually after the general election, assuming Tok Mat would win a seat and then, you know, which could pave his way to the premiership. So he would sort of hold forth for them or warm the seat for this mainstream faction until such time that both Najib and Zahid Hamidi would be clear of their legal concerns.
And, you know, what you're saying is that, you know, we know based on what you're saying, based on recent trends, that despite recent election results, UMNO is perhaps not as strong as it used to be, you know, in their heyday. And one of the reasons is because of, like you brought up, these various factions in UMNO, namely what you call the mainstream sort of a faction, or some call it the court cluster, Zahid Hamidi and Najib Razak, and Tok Mat is part of that sort of faction in that sense. And there's also the minister cluster in that sense, where you have Ismail Sabri, you have the likes of perhaps Khairi Jamaluddin and whatnot. How has this battle between this faction developed over the past few months? And where are we at right now? Who do you think has the highest chance of becoming UMNO's PM candidate? And where does former Prime Minister Najib fit into all this? Is he sort of helping the situation in UMNO, or is his presence there making things worse?
Well, I think this sort of UMNO factional power struggles have been going on since almost UMNO's very inception.
Right.
And its latest round, of course, evolved since the Sheraton move 2 years ago. And as you said, there were those UMNO senior leaders who were appointed into cabinets. And, well, of course, they would like to hold on to their various ministries, right? Whereas I think since at least the beginning of last year, if not even earlier, I think it was since the second half of 2020, UMNO's mainstream factions, namely Zahid and Najib and so on, would like to change leadership. At that point, it was namely, what's his name, Muhyiddin Yassin. When they succeeded in doing so, I think they put up the Ismail Sabri, thinking that Ismail Sabri would be, you know, as pliant as they would like him to be. But when he, you know, gets support from the other side and so on, I don't think they get very thrilled about it. And thereby, you see them trying to put another, hopefully pliant candidate as their prime minister of choice, again, until such time when they are clear of their legal concerns.
You say that, you know, the ministers would like to hold on to their positions as long as possible. And that seems like a very reasonable and logical sort of perspective that they would hold. But then here's what I find interesting, and I'm trying to figure out, especially on the part of Ismail Sabri, because as Prime Minister, he's rather, you know, he's one of those prime ministers that is rather under the radar. He's low-key. In a way, he reminds me a little bit of Patla Ahmad Badawi prior to Najib. And now many have suggested that he's not exactly a favourite among UMNO members to be the next prime minister candidate. Recently, there was a rather fascinating and symbolic video circulating the internet where we see a bunch of UMNO top guns standing on a stage and then we see the president, Zahid Hamidi, sort of nonchalantly pushing Ismail Sabri to the back and, you know, bringing former Prime Minister Najib Razak, his close ally, to the front. From my vantage point, right, Ehsan, it seems like it would be, like you said, in Ismail Sabri's best interest to not dissolve Parliament anytime soon. But on that same note, during the assembly, he came out and said that, and I quote, "We won't wait for a second to dissolve Parliament if we are confident in Barisan Nasional's victory. So what exactly is Ismail Sabri's game plan here?
Well, I think as you suggested, he is trying to delay the general election for as long as possible because he also can see the mainstream faction of AMNO's game. Namely, they would be still in a position to nominate candidates, and these candidates are loyal to, let's say, Zahid and Najib and so on. So after the election, assuming AMNO will still score a big win, then these very loyal MPs would then be in a position to sort of ease Ismail Sabri out. And of course, he would like to delay that day of reckoning for as long as possible, right?
Right?
But if you look at the bigger picture here, it's also like this. I think after the Sheraton move, it's like, everybody and anybody is a potential prime minister, right? I mean, besides Ismail Sabri, who would even imagine, for example, previously Muhyiddin becoming the prime minister. So that's why some of these more senior and prominent AMNO ministers in the cabinet, for example, we are talking about Khairi, we are talking about Hishamuddin and so on. Well, on the one hand, of course, they would still like to be ministers, but I think they also have a little bit of political ambitions, you know. At one point, you know, maybe I can also become the prime minister, right? And that's why they were a bit more careful in terms of aligning themselves with the mainstream faction, because as you suggested, another name, not so polite name for the mainstream faction, it's the court cluster, right? They would like to sort of make themselves pristine and purified so that when the time is right, they could also step up to become prime minister. And so when it is hopeful for everybody to do so, to become potential prime minister, you actually have a very, shall we say, diverse and scattered opposition against the mainstream faction. They are not unified. For example, Hisham and Khairi, they are not unified around Ismail Sabri. So that's why, partially, why the mainstream faction could still dominate AMNO. Now, one more thing. You talk about whether these factional fights would affect the electoral support and so on. I don't quite think so, actually, because AMNO, it's a very resilient party. When needed, it could sort of consolidate and coalesce around the party very, very soon and present a united front against other political coalitions. That's why you see them riding from one electoral victory to another, from Malacca to Johor.
Absolutely. You brought up the likes of Khairi Jamaluddin, right? And I'm wondering, how much of power do they have within AMNO, you know, internally? I'm talking about not just Khairi Jamaluddin, but even the likes of, let's say, Azalina Othman, because these are MPs that if you go on social media, let's say on Twitter and stuff, they are very popular even among, you know, Pakatan Harapan supporters and whatnot. They seem to, you know, be just generally very popular. But then when you come to, let's say, the likes, when you see, like, observe the AMNO General Assembly and whatnot, they are not one of those people who make noise and you know, the interesting stories in that sense, in that context, don't necessarily surround the likes of Khairi Jamaluddin and Azalina Othman when it, you know, comes to all these faction wars and AMNO General Assembly speeches and whatnot. I'm wondering if, you know, the popularity that they have as MPs among people, especially on the social media circle, do they have that same sort of hold or popularity within AMNO itself?
Well, I think they suffer from what I would call the Rafizi syndrome. Huh? And I think at least Khairi, it's perhaps some sort of a friend of Rafizi. Like when Rafizi was coming back to PKR, I think a lot of progressive-minded Malaysians are very happy he's going to revive PKR and so on. But I think within PKR, I don't think he's extremely welcome by the rank and files. By the same token, you will see people like Hishamuddin and Khairi Jamaluddin and so on being at best, as you say, in social media, right? Mm-hmm. Khairi, it's almost universally perceived to have sort of handled the COVID pandemic very well and so on. But again, both of them within the parties, perhaps they are quite sorely lacking in their grassroots support.
Right.
Well, I don't know whether we like it or not. It's actually quite a democratic party in the sense that the senior leaders would have to be voted in by a large base of delegates. We are not talking about only, I think, a few thousands. We are talking about a few tens of thousands of right. Delegates voting them in. And in order to sort of endear yourself to these delegates, well, you need to make the rounds. You need to go to their party divisions and so on. Unfortunately, while I think both of them did some of this, it was ultimately, I think, not enough to right. make them sort of popular as much as Najib and Zahid among the grassroots of the party. Right. Well, Najib, at this point, since we bring up this topic, is indeed an electoral asset to the party. Wherever he went, he would be able to to get people trying to get selfies with him and so on. And Najib, throughout the years, retained somewhat of an iron grip on grassroots support within UMNO. So yeah, I think we will be seeing Najib for quite some time to come. Yeah,
I want to switch gears a little bit and talk about UMNO's relationship with PAS, because this has been one roller coaster of a ride, because they have been teasing that they are best friends and then not friends anymore. And then sometimes during elections, they want to partner up. But then in recent months, it seems like that has sort of really, really deteriorated their relationship. And PAS is together with Bersatu in Perikatan Nasional, but UMNO seems to be, focused on trying to be the dominant party in Malaysia again with their Barisan Nasional allies like MIC, MCA and whatnot. Did we learn anything, Ehsan, from the UMNO General Assembly about the cooperation between UMNO PAS, also known as Muafakat Nasional?
Well, of course, I think there were the war cries against PAS and by extension Perikatan Nasional and so on. But there were also calls for PAS to sort of to come back, as to say, to Muafakat Nasional, that PAS has strayed away, but yes, it's okay, they can come back and so on. And I think that has to do a lot with the fact that even Perikatan Nasional, despite their not having won a lot of seats in both Melaka and Johor, they still secure about 20 to 25% of votes, and that's a very sizable chunk. And we don't know how many of those are actually PAS supporters who then transfer their votes to Bersatu and so on. So in the ideal scenario, Muafakat Nasional would be revived. I mean, from UMNO's point of view, and then UMNO would still play the leading role, but PAS would be given certain portfolios socially. On social policy and so on, which PAS typically prefers. And, they could go on and then solidify their grip on power, right? But, of course, sometimes PAS would find UMNO overbearing. That's why it decided to associate itself with Bersatu instead. But depending on how viable Bersatu is in the long run, PAS, I think, may or may not think of going back to be associated with UMNO.
All right, Ehsan, before we wrap this conversation up, do you have some final thoughts on the UMNO General Assembly, as well as when do you think we can expect elections, if at all? Do you think it's going to definitely happen this year, or perhaps we're just going to wait until Parliament dissolves naturally next year?
I think we're actually looking at two elections, namely the national general election, mm-hmm. as well as UMNO's party election, right? It's only a question of which one will precede the other. I think for Zahid and so on, you will first have the general election, and only after that you have party election, so that you will still hold on to the nomination power of candidates. But for Ismail Sabri, I think he would love to see the party election going ahead of the general election, so that as the prime minister of the day, perhaps he could still have some incumbent advantage in terms of prevailing, let's say, over Top Mat or over Zahid as the party's president. But even that, I think, is a long shot for him. So in that case, if I were him, I would push the general election until the expiry of the current government's term, so that I can maximize my stay as the prime minister.
On that note, thank you so much for joining me today, Ehsan.
Thank you very much indeed.
That was Dr. O.A. Sun, Senior Fellow at the Singapore Institute of International Affairs, talking to me about what went down during the UMNO General Assembly. If you missed any part of our conversation, you can check us out on podcast. We are available on the BFM app, bfm.my, or pretty much wherever you get your podcasts from. I'm Darshan Johan, and this has been Beyond the Ballot Box, BFM 89.9.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, the business station.